a lengthy experience along that line.
Mm-hmm. Was this Filipino wrestling or Western style wrestling?
I think it was Western wrestling. It was during the early 30s or in the 30s or early 40s. There were already Americans that were already, you know, having influence on mm-hmm. on the Philippines, including Western style boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sam, can you tell us a little bit about Anshan Bakon's more notable students?
Over the years, he had several students, you know. His original students from what I know were, like I mentioned, Delfin Lopez, Timor Maranga, Jesus Cui. I think Jesus Cui was with him when he separated from the Arlabangon Fencing Club. So with Atyong Abelia and Hugo Milan and Vicente Atilio, who's the father of Ising Atilio. And Joe Villasin also joined him in that group. And a little bit later after that, Teddy Boat joined with the club. And over the years, I'm sure he had many students because he also conducted private lessons. I was informed that the mayor of Mandawi and even Senator Rene Espina were his students. And there was Pilates, who was the world-renowned guitarist, who was also a student. As a matter of fact, I caught up with him when he used to work out. And a little bit later, some of the people started dying, and Delfin died. And Timor had his maranga, had his own style, and he also had his own students. And Villasin also started teaching. But in my generation, the people I caught up with were Turo Sanchez, who was the brother-in-law of Teddy, whom Teddy originally taught, and Dr. Abe Serna, Abraham Serna, and Jordi Lopez, who was also originally taught by Teddy, who also studied with Anshong, and Boy Heffy, Octavius, Jim Heffy, who is a pilot, and Janet Chuten was a kung fu guy with I don't know, he probably 7th, 8th, 9th, what degree. he was a very, very good in kung fu. And we sort of held him a little bit in suspicion because he was using the art. Eventually, he was a little bit disappointed with Balintawak and joined some other smaller club. And I caught up with Bobby Tabimina and Roman Encarnacion, and of course I was there. And I used to follow him from his, because Anshong moved his studio. I remember that he had his studio at one time at the Aboitiz building. And then that moved to the Gochan building. And then that moved to the Inad building. I followed him throughout all of this. And eventually he started working out on the backyard of his student Roman Encarnacion, which was in Labangon. And I went to that place only once, but because he was visiting us anyway at the Veles Villasin Club. And I was also getting some private lessons from him. Because one of the things he did was he would visit his students, and it was a friendly visit, but we knew that he needed a little help, and I was always quick to pull my wallet and help him out, and then he would give me lessons, and then he would go to my house, and we would work out in my office. I had a large space in my office, and I would close the door. And the way I would do it, instead of going to the palakat, is I would ask him questions. And that's where the secrets came out, you know. You have to present him with a problem, the what ifs. What if this is the situation? And then he would show you. And, you know, I would contend that Anshan was really a genius of his art, you know. He never claimed himself to be a genius. This claim is made by me, his pupil. And like I've said, he's fabled and legendary and loved and respected by his students, but hated and feared by his rivals and lifetime enemies.
Mm-hmm.
We would say lifetime enemies because there was always a rivalry between the Doce Pares and Balintawak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So but I would say that he was the deadliest practitioner of his art. And of course, his battles were verifiable, unlike some claim that they've had 100 duels.
Mm-hmm.
That's just so far from the truth. Probably they counted the workouts with their own students. But at one time he was attacked, and the coconut groves in Labangon, he was waylaid in the dark among coconut trees. And, you know, using his own self-defense and using the knife of his assailant, disarmed the assailant and killed the assailant and broke some limbs in the process.
Mm.
I asked him the same how it was done, and he showed me the moves, and I said, oh my goodness, yeah, he'd break his leg and break his arm and kill him in a very few moves. And, you know, when he was charged and he was convicted because the judge did not deem it self-defense anymore. Sometimes you can kill a person if you are doing it in self-defense, but this was more than just defending himself.
It's beyond.
Because he went beyond defending himself. he could have disarmed him, and that would have been sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, you know, stab him once, but then to break his arm and his leg and have several holes on his chest and his abdomen was already more than self-defense. So, but I'm not sure how long he was incarcerated, but he was also teaching Eskrima even in jail.
Oh, really?
And by one of the guys who was also a student, Bobby Tabimina, claims that his father, who was a colonel, helped in getting him released. So that's mm-hmm. why Bobby Tabimina, I understand, got some special instructions from him. And I don't know if you know Bobby Tabimina, but he's also a good practitioner. And he has the same grace of Anshong.
Has Grandmaster Anshong Bakun used Balintawak against other styles?
Oh, yeah.
Other martial artists?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bring any style to him. And, all karatekas, he would land them in the seat of the pants with him hovering in a menacing manner, you know. There were guys. That's the way they became loyal Balintawak students. I can't quite remember, but one of the guys just skips my memory. Very good friend of mine, big guy. He was both a boxer and I don't know what other martial arts, but he was a bodybuilder, and he just landed him in the seat of his pants and. And he just said, okay, I'm going to study then. I'll be your student then. And he became a very, very loyal, student.
I would like to ask, where did Anshong Bakun learn Balintawak? Or who were his influences?
Like I said, he was a student of Saavedra.
Mm-hmm.
And he must have learned it from... I really don't know that far deep into his history. I only know from what I read and from what I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
So how he learned his skills, and I think the thing that he did was he innovated innovated. That's why, that's what makes him really the genius of his art, you know. He innovated. And
well, he never stopped adding to what his knowledge was that he got from other trainers.
No, there were of course he used his old knowledge from the Labangan Fencing Club. But then he did not stop there. He innovated, and that's how he would beat anybody else, because you know how it is. When you start questioning your own knowledge and even your teachers, that's why I have an open attitude towards the growth of Balintawak, and I'm not close-minded, because I see, some people that are so closed as far as learning other styles. But Eskrima is evolving and growing. My students are from all different martial arts and backgrounds, and a lot of them are teachers,
mm-hmm.
Black belts, and so they're good in their own right. So if you do not grow, if you do not allow them to question you, the first thing I tell my students is first learn Eskrima, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you learn the Eskrima, now apply everything that you know. Everything that you know, apply it to me. And that's a test of how Eskrima holds up against the others. Now, of course, I see the moves and I say, you see, what's my counter to this? And that's how I also grow in my own style.
Mm-hmm.
So I myself, I innovate. Bobby innovates. I know Bobby innovates. And I can see the growth of Eskrima.
Mm-hmm.
And that you cannot just stick to old knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing in academic knowledge. That's why they discourage, inbreeding, like just learning just from your master, and you don't go beyond it. Because you cannot learn everything that your master will teach you, or your master's knowledge. You have to think on your own, learn what you can from him, and improve on what you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that I can remember everything that was in Anshong's mind,
mm-hmm.
or even on what my contemporaries know, because a lot of them came at different periods. And probably the techniques that were applied to them were different from the techniques that were applied to me,
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it is.
Do you find students that study other martial arts, do they have a hard time learning Balintawak?
Balintawak is different from a lot of commercial martial arts, because I see students lined up in long lines and say, okay, strike one, two, three. That kind does not really go deep. There is no way, It's got to be one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of techniques and nuances in moves. A slight twist in the wrist and makes the whole difference. Where you place your body weight and lots of little nuances that make the difference in learning Balintawak. So unless a student has been really has had personal instructions from the master, his knowledge will be surface knowledge. It's just, and a lot, one thing here in the United States, they like to get all these certificates and belts and be called a black belt.
Mm-hmm.
Those black belts are worthless.
Mm-hmm.
They really are. Really, a lot of those people who think that they know, they don't know squat. They cannot withstand a real serious test in the art. So that's just the way I feel about it.
Is there a ranking system in Balintawak?
Ranking? No, we don't have a ranking system. Now, the new instructors like Bobby Tabuada, and he has established a ranking system, and to his credit, he has been a little bit strict in granting belts. I don't know what they call them, but during our time, no, you're only as good as your last fight. If prove it every night that you're better than the others, and that's the only way you got your respect, that you could defend yourself.
What are your views on the titles, Grandmaster, etc.?
I am one of those who I'm really reticent in using the term. I always reserve the term of Grandmaster to Anshul Bakon. Even Veles and Villasin never called themselves Grandmaster. And now all these young kids who never even had any experience with Anshul Bakon call themselves Grandmaster.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me, you know, a little bit uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the among the younger people, I think the people who can probably call themselves a grandmaster because of innovation and advancement, and would probably be Bobby Tabuada.
Mm-hmm.
I really consider him one of the, you know, the people that can. Teddy Boot never called himself grandmaster. He just called him Manong Ted.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how it is in the Philippines, Manong is just respectful and older.
Mm-hmm.
I just call myself guru, or, you know, a Filipino, that's teacher. I'm just a teacher. That's all. So anybody who wants the grandiose title, you know, has the burden of proof of showing that they're that good, you know.
What is it that makes Balintawak a superior fighting art, in your opinion?
Superior? I don't know whether we call a sense of superior fighting art. It's a stick fighting or weapons fighting. Because there are so many fighting arts that try to prove themselves as superior at the octagon, you know, ultimate fighting. So we now have mixed martial arts. But in the octagon, you don't have weapons. But when it comes to eskrima or stick fighting, I would not be coy about calling our style a superior. You know, that's just how I feel. It's mostly weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Stick fighting, and we can fight with or without a stick. We are also trained on bare hand combat and a little bit of takedowns and the locks, submission holds, and others. But it's not the complete art. I mean, when complete, like people at the octagon. They have probably Muay Thai and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and probably both the hitting and the grappling arts combined.
Right.
But there's no weapons.
And in a real fight, there normally is.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about making claims of things like that.
Mm-hmm. In your opinion, what do you think of the Balintawak of today compared to when you were learning it?
During our time, it was different, you know. Like I said, it was one-on-one instruction. Now it's gotten more commercialized. So students now come from different backgrounds of the techniques. And my own students, they're very respectful, because to start with, they don't know anything about stick fighting. So no matter how many belts they have, when I give them the stick, they cannot defend themselves against me. So during our time, our training was more or less not as, let me try to think about this. It was also a one-on-one instruction, and mostly with the master, and there was less control. And we were, the teachers were not very shy about hitting your knuckles if you do not follow instructions very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
If you are told to do this, move back or do this, and you fail to follow that, then probably a rap to the knee would teach you to move it.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're more, I think it's the money aspect of it. We did not, that differentiates it.
Who would you consider the practitioners of Balintawak that are skilled today?
As of today,
mm-hmm.
like I mentioned, I think I would hold up Bobby Tabuada, because he was both an original student of Villasin and Veles. and was later trained by Bakon, you know, and his visit to the clubhouse. And Bobby has innovated, and he has undergone a lot of experience, and he has learned how to teach. In his broken English, he can communicate. And Bobby, you know, he was trained because he was a fearless fighter and would volunteer for fights or tournaments. And there are younger people now. There are Bobby Tabimina, Nick Eleazar, Arturo Sanchez, who's the brother-in-law of Teddy. And he commutes between the United States and the Philippines. I guess he's in the Philippines now. And the Velez brothers, who are still in the Philippines, and Vinicin boys, who are here in the United States. And I would put in there Nene Gabukayan as one of the students, probably. And we have some newcomers in the Philippines which I don't have very much. I'm not very much in contact with. We still have Dr. Marapao there, who's good, and Abe Serna, and we have Teddy Booth's students. I don't know too many of them now, but Teddy has had a good following in Michigan. So that's about, I'm sure that there are some whom I have not gotten in touch with or who learned their arts at different times in the master's career, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
tell us a little bit about what you're doing now. We understand that you're currently living in Arizona, and are you still teaching?
Yeah, I have a very few students. I have about probably 6 students, and I just work out once a week. I'm 73 years old, and I'm trying to act 73, but these people still come to me. my joints are not as strong as they used to be. I have to plant my foot very firmly. Otherwise, I don't want to twist my knee.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to swing too hard. Otherwise, it'll dislocate my shoulder or my elbow. So I'm just trying to keep my skills and teach a few. Some of the old students come and visit me, and we have sometimes little parties, and they come join me and have a little tete-a-tete with the students and recount things. But I try to keep in touch. I have my website, theboot.net or samboot.com. The thing is, I only place just the basics on the net, because the more complicated stuff is in my CD, which I'm trying to keep so that to get people to buy it.
Sure. Can you tell us more about your book that's on the CD?
Yeah, well, like I said, of course, it's hard to tell the entire story of the book, but I start with the history of Eskrima. I try to describe the Malintawak masters, the basics of the art, from warm-ups, basic strikes and defenses. And then I go into detail the grouping method that's taught by Vigasin. And then the compound deliveries and strikes, and some methods which we call semi-offensive. It's hard to describe them until you see them. And then I have the Quintada system with a very misunderstood term. A lot of people call themselves, they're using the Quintada. They don't even know the meaning of a Quintada.
What is the meaning of Quintada?
Quintada is really comes from the Spanish word Quintal, which are to count, you know. That means you sort of calculate or see what you deliver a strike, anticipating that they're going to counter with a certain strike.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before he can counter, you have already anticipated that. So it's a ruse, system of ruses, and that's more advanced. You know, you should be able to count 2, 3, 4 steps ahead if you are that good. And then we have the irregular or unclassified attacks and defenses to that. And then we have the advanced methods and an analysis of the grouping system. And I also described advanced analysis of the strikes and counters and defenses, and like a basic strike, like if you deliver a number one strike, I can counter in 50 different ways, you know. So that's what we analyze. How can I counter this particular strike? If you give me a strike number one, of course, this is the basic counter. But that's not all. You can use your arms, your elbows, your knees, and your feet, and in combination with this. And then I have some bare hand techniques, and we have, of course, the disarming takeaways and other fighting techniques and theories on fighting. I have a glossary of words, you know, the words that I use, which are mostly Cebuano words, and I have a little personal album there, my brag.
That's okay.
About myself.
So all of these can be ordered at your website on PDF and in a CD format, correct?
Yeah. And, you know, I think, in conclusion, I think I want to impart to the students of Eskrima, it's an art. It's like literature, painting, dance, music. It's an art.
Exactly.
It's a science of grace, precision, speed, strength, and beauty. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's clad in violence, because martial arts is sort of violent. And it can be deadly and fatal, but especially in this world here in the United States, it's hardly a price to be paid for an insult or provocation. So you should study it and practice it as a release for your internal aggression. It's a good physical exercise to take care of your inner hostility. And like I say, on the lighter side, many martial artists are in truth and in fact hectored and handpicked husbands. So, they do not use, you cannot hit their wives, so no matter how termagant the wife is, so it is something that you should, you know, it's a great responsibility to
absolutely
have.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely.
And it should not be taught to a responsible, quick thing, tempered bullies.
Mm-hmm.
So, and keep it from the criminally minded, always advocate that Eskrima, as in any self-defense, this is also what I teach my sons. It should be used to defend the oppressed and not to oppress the weak and the defenseless. Besides, in today's culture, it's never good to swagger and abuse your skills, because guns are great equalizers, and sometimes those little punks carrying a gun can quickly subdue the best martial artist. So, mm-hmm. Like I said, it's an art. Use it as a means of defense,
mm-hmm.
as a means of survival. Sometimes you may use it still in the streets, but just don't swallow. Avoid the fight at all costs. But if you get into a fight, like I said, there are no second places in street fights. So don't get into a fight. But if you must, hit first and hit hard.
Exactly. Well, Sam, we normally close our interviews with this question. In general, what are your views on the current state of the Filipino martial arts?
Oh, I am happy that it is moving as fast as it has grown, because in the late 70s and early 80s, I felt that I was the only one in the world that was
doing it.
That was promoting it outside the United States, you know. Maybe Teddy, but Teddy is not. He's not the type that grandstands. He's a very private person.
Mm-hmm.
You have to dig him out. And my work has been copied and rehashed and rewarded, which now appears to be the work of other people. But it's all right. It's just promoting Eskrima, and Eskrima is really fast and wide and
mm-hmm.
worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And I see my face, my name, even in German publications, French publications, and other.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, wow, you know, I guess it's good that it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's part of our mission here at FMA Pulse, is to really help tell the stories of people who've been there and who've really helped to build the foundation of what we call Eskrima or FMA today. And not many people have the opportunity to speak to people like yourself. and we really want to share your story with the public. The public can really learn from this and have the opportunity to add that knowledge and experience to their repertoire. So thank you very much.
Yeah, enjoy your study, be safe, have fun, and remember it's an art.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for this review.